Israel's parliament speaker says that a new coalition cabinet will be sworn in on Sunday, ending Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's 12 years in power. China warns the U.S. against pursuing a trade deal with Taiwan after Washington said that it would start negotiations with the Chinese claimed territory. And a U.S. government report on the origins of COVID-19 concludes that the virus may have been leaked from a Chinese lab in Wuhan.
This is a special coverage of a live event.
Right? This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The second televised presidential debate is just about to start. All seven candidates are here at Arabi Studios in northern Tehran. This second televised debate will focus on politics, society, and culture. The first televised debate, which was broadcast last Saturday, focused on the economy. This one focuses on politics, society, and culture. Roughly speaking, you can divide the candidates into two groups, the reformists and the principalists. The principalists, there are five of them, and the reformists are made up of two candidates, Abdel Nasser Hemati and Mohsen Mehralizadeh. The other five candidates are principalists, and broadly speaking, in the first televised debate, both camps blamed each other or pointed the finger of blame at each other for exacerbating the country's economic situation. I think all the candidates are now gathering at Arabi Studios here in northern Tehran. The election itself will be held on Friday, 18th of June. That's just 10 days from now, on Friday, 18th of June. And the seven presidential candidates are Ebrahim Raisi, the head of the judiciary, Ayazad Zarqani, a former member of the Iranian parliament, Mohsen Rezaei, the former head of IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, and he's also a prominent member of the Expediency Council of Iran, Saeed Jalili, the former top nuclear negotiator of Iran and also a top member of the Expediency Council, Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi, a former member of the parliament, a well-known member of the Iranian parliament, Abdel Nasser Hemati, the head for the last 3 years, he's been the head of the Central Bank of Iran. He only resigned basically just 2 weeks ago, I believe, and he was for the last 3 years he's been the head of the Central Bank of Iran. And Mohsen Mehralizadeh, the seventh and final candidate, his background is in sports, and he's a former minister of sports and physical exercise and sports. So those are the candidates. Okay. Let's go over now to, I believe the candidates are now seated in the studio. I can see Mohsen Rezaei, who's seated in his seat and in the studio. And next to him, I can see, Zarqani, Ayazad Zarqani, the former member of the Iranian parliament. All the candidates are now seated. Let's go over now to Arabi Studio for the second televised debate between the presidential candidates for Iran's 2021 presidential election. This debate will focus on politics, society, and culture. The first debate focused on the economy. Over we go to the studio.
Get engaged in a matter of seconds at this point.
اجازه میخوام به بینندگان، شنوندگان و مخاطبین محترم
Different channels, TV channels, World Service channels of the Islamic Republic of Iran and others, and as well as international networks. Greetings to you all, dear viewers. Also, greetings to the hearing impaired who are following this program through the Salamat channel. Greetings to every single candidate here in this studio. Good afternoon. You're welcome. Thank you for coming here. Thank you, dear candidates. Based on the standard operating procedures of TV programs, although all of them are high-profile figures, I introduced them randomly. Candidate number one, Mr. Mohsen Reza Mirghayat. Candidate number two, Mr. Ali Reza Zakani. Candidate number three, Mr. Mohsen Mehrali Zadeh. Candidate number four, Mr. Sayyid Amir Hussein Qazi Zadeh Hashemi. Candidate number five, Mr. Saeed Jalili. Candidate number six, Mr. Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi. Candidate number seven, Mr. Abdul Nasser Hemmati. At the beginning, let me read an announcement by the Presidential Election Campaign Monitoring Committee of the Presidential Office. Dear respected people of Iran, now in the lead up to the 13th presidential election, as the manifestation of the popular vote, we have the honor to be at your service. Let us inform you that based on the presidential election law, in order to give assurances that all presidential candidates have equal opportunity to use government facilities, a commission called Election Central Executive Board has been set up, bringing together a member of the Elections IRAB Supervisory Board and the Interior Ministry as representatives of the three branches of government. This commission has is tasked with, based on the election law, of course, if deems it necessary that during this presidential debate, if any of the candidates uses statements against any of the other candidates using insulting remarks or any comments which run against the country's law, this commission will give enough time to that candidate to defend himself. Accordingly, in order to respect public opinion of the people of Iran, observing and implementing the election law is, and remind them that this law should be implemented, and we hope that the 13th presidential election, actually, in this program revolves around political, social, and cultural issues, and we hope an ethical atmosphere will rule this debate. The Presidential Election Campaign Monitoring Commission. Once again, let me remind you that Studio 11, our studio, is the largest studio of the IRAB, 480 square meters, 50 meters high, and the candidates are sitting at enough distance from each other, so we are not wearing masks. Also, the Presidential Election Campaign Monitoring Committee has instructed me to, if elections speak off topic and do not address the question, I have a duty to remind them. And this is the second debate, like the previous, the first debate. This debate includes two halves, and each half includes three sections, and at the beginning of each section, I will give the relevant explanations about that section. In the first section of the first half, we ask each of the candidates one question, and the respective candidates have 4 minutes to answer the questions. Let me actually open this envelope, and these questions are sealed. As you can see, there are seven questions here, and I will choose them by lot randomly to see which candidate is supposed to answer which question, and each candidate will have 4 minutes to answer the relevant question. Let me choose the first candidate by lot. Candidate number six, Mr. Raisi. Question number seven. Candidate number six is going to answer question number seven. This question is related to the class differences, social class differences, the current differences, class differences, which is due to some rent-seeking and some improper policies in some administrations, has made actually some classes of society, especially low-income families, has harmed them. If you become president, how are you going to deal with this issue, and will we witness more class differences among different income brackets of the society? You have 4 minutes to answer this question.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, praise be to Almighty God, and salute to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his household. Allow me to start by saying that in the previous session, some misdemeanor maybe was connected and was immoral on the basis of what is said in the legislation. It was I was allowed to defend. I don't want to use this right of defense, so I just leave it to the people. The people themselves can have their own defense. Hopefully, what's going to happen in this debate session will be on the basis of morals, on the basis of laws, on the basis of what is required of such meetings to happen, hopefully. Of course, people who speak Azeri dialect in Iran's Azerbaijan, from Azerbaijan elsewhere, they speak Azeri, and they were so kind to me, and I'm really thankful to them, like always. Now, as for this social class gap, that's one of the predicaments in our society. You know, this is the result of injustice. This is the result of inaccurate economic policies. It's the result of the type of decision-making that would end up in different kinds of gaps in different sectors. One is one that gets hold of astronomical wages and salaries, and one is less privileged. Now, we have this health, for example, project that was raised. Within that system, some people got 100, 200 million tomans of salaries, but some of our nurses and doctors and physicians, they received very little. In a given fact organization, you can also sometimes see that the staffers are paid differently. Huge, huge gaps. Some bylaws have been issued, and hopefully if I get people's votes as president, at the very beginning, I will have those bylaws and regulations revisited. This multiplication of some salaries by some manager that may have received. They should be revisited. We believe that justice should prevail. When we talk about justice, it means justice and attraction and holding and recruiting and holding them and also paying them properly. We need to also have justice, a just system of payment of salaries and wages. Capacities should be distributed on the basis of justice. Economic potential in the country and capacities should be on the basis of justice. If all capacities are distributed fairly, we won't see so much class gap and social gap. So what we need to know is that this much class gap, where somebody is totally deprived, somebody is well-to-do, this is the result of our economic decision-making, like the payment of credit lines and loans in our country. This in an unfair system that further deepens that gap among different strata of society. Some class gaps are the results of a large number of unfair decisions that are made. Let's say, for instance, we have 4,200 tillings worth of the foreign exchange, then the result will be some people win, and overnight they accumulate such great massive wealth, and some people lose all that they have in belongings. So the system of supervision and oversight on the supervision, on consumption, all of this can't stop the social debt from forming. The combination of all of
this. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Raisi. Let's choose the next candidate by lot. Candidate number one, Mr. Rezaei. Let's choose the question randomly. Question number one to be asked. This is question number one. One of the most important objectives of the revolution is to create a promising future for the youth. You as a presidential candidate, what do you think is the most important obstacle to creating hope among the young people, and what are your practical solutions in this regard? You have 4 minutes to answer the question.
Mardum Aziz Iran.
Dear nation of Iran, greetings to you all. Your problems will not be resolved through promises, slogans, or witchcraft, or magic. The solution, in fact, are economic root causes with respect to those problems. As a chemistry student who was selling things on the street, he said that we eat hope due to hunger. He is right, because hope is something that you can see. It's not something to talk about. It's something to hope, something to observe. And my administration will bring back hope to all of you, and once again, you will see the smile of victory on your faces. Another point, I wish to mention that there was something true said in the previous debate. Those who do not want to stay till the end, they should announce this to the people. This should not have been said through insults, as you have also felt. I will remain till the end of the campaign, and I will compete with all. In the previous debate, I spoke about Iran and the hopefulness in this country. Now I want to talk of the Iranian nation. All the ethnicities who have contributed to the building of this land's culture, and Azerbaijan, which is the head of this land, and Mr. Bakeri, who fought against the enemy. I told him, I addressed him in Azeri language, and also Tehrani Moghaddam, and all the heroes. So we managed to actually contribute to the victory in the war, and also we contributed to the triumph of the revolution in collectively with the people. And that includes the Shiites, Sunnis, and I wonder why some are leveling, some are accusing me for being from the Zagros region. I belong to the lower ethnicity, and in the course of my life, I have benefited from the capacities of all ethnicities. My government comprises all Iranians, and hope will be realized when provided that we inject new energy into the society, and also the governments that sleep at night and the price of petrol increases several fold, and a sleepy government, and the people pour onto the streets. They have not been briefed. They pour onto the streets, and those problems are created. We have to say goodbye to sleepy governments. I promise the nation that the year 1400 will be a year for a breakthrough, and we're going to have a new start in 1400 Iranian calendar year. And this year has been attributed to the Lord, to the Imam of the time. And I'm certain that the Iranian nation will say goodbye to all the problems. So once again, we will return smile to the people's faces, and we will actually promote public welfare. And the last real that has been taken to another person's pocket, that will return. And there's going to be new hope.
Thank you. Let's choose the next candidate by lot. Candidate number 5, Mr. Jalili. And let's choose the next question randomly. Question number 3 to be asked. Question number 3. Adopting key and prompt decisions and bringing about a structural overhaul requires an administration which has high popular trust. What are your programs in order to increase people's trust in your potential administration? You have 4 minutes to answer this question. Your time has just begun.
You say hello to all respected Iranian fellow compatriots. If we want to win the trust of the people, definitely you need to act properly as authorities. I mean, one of the things that stops us from doing the right things properly is the erroneous political culture that has existed in our bureaucracy and administrative system. And this has nothing to do with one or two factions. It doesn't belong to one certain government. It's something that's widespread and extensive. We need to pay special attention to this issue, be it those people who are your rivals or your friends and supporters. They may be equally harmed by this. I mean, in case of the administrative, the executive body of the government, if you do not erase this wrong culture off, then that will create, that will make the capacities and capabilities of the country to come to a halt. Let me cite you a couple of examples. Now, in a previous meeting, I also mentioned this, and let me elaborate on that a bit further. You see, in our political culture, if theater replaces real work, then you cannot expect things to be pushed forward. You know, by theatrical action games, you know, you cannot run the country's affairs. Now, let me explain this a little bit. Let's say instead of expressing the results of the job, you just explain the process of the work that I have done this, I've prepared so many pages of reports, I've made those visits, but there have been no results out of this. This culture is a wrong one. Things will not be done this way. I mean, if you do away with root causes and fundamental causes and do some theatrical work, then definitely the problems will remain. I mean, if you do not have the budget structure reform and correction, if you don't care about it, if the banking supervision is not paid attention to, then things will come to a stop. So if the result of what you've done, maybe non-stop work, if people do not feel as if it is not tangible, it shows that this has not been a real thing that was done. This was theater. There was a show. So I'm saying that if you say that, okay, what's the theater? That means you shoot a bullet, no, whatever it hits, you say, that was a target. You just hit it, you pull the trigger, you say it hit there, so that was a target. You said, we want to remove the sanctions, but you see the sanctions doubled. Then you say, no, we did a moral thing. We came first in moral, let's say, battlefield. This is not the right result that we need to achieve. We shouldn't allow this culture to spread. I mean, let's say, while doing your work, you do not make decisions in due time. Something is always facing delays for a year or 2 years. It's awaiting a decision. This is exactly what has put the country into trouble. I mean, let's say you have multiple jobs among the authorities. They have several jobs. If this is true, well, you need to dedicate all your powers, all your time to one job. If you have several jobs, and this is a culture, and if it's even considered as value, then this person cannot follow up his job properly. So what I'm saying is that if you want to follow certain things, we need to be cautious. We need to be cautious, this political culture to be rectified so that lots of things could be done in the right and proper way.
Thank you.
If, God forbid, this goes on to the next generation, things will get worse. I mean, if it's the young generation that's coming to office.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Let's choose the next candidate. Candidate number 3, Mr. Mehradizadeh. Question number 4 to be asked. Mr. Mehradizadeh is going to answer this question. This is question number 4. The maximum pressure policy of the United States during the Trump era by the admission of the Americans themselves is a failed policy. So the new U.S. administration, just in words, has said that he wants to return to the JCPOA. Iran has also stressed that for this to happen, sanctions should be lifted, and given the breaches of promises by the U.S., Iran should verify that sanctions have actually been lifted. If you become president, in order to realize this policy, which has been announced by the Supreme Leader, and also in order to protect national interests, what method will you adopt and choose? You have 4 minutes to answer this question.
In the name of God, as you said, based on the policies of the establishment and due to the U.S. breaching the law and exerting maximum pressure, and also we witnessed Iranian nation's steadfastness that led to the foiling of the Americans' plots. And in this way, the Islamic Republic of Iran's standpoints are correct ones, and we should just take part in the talks in order to restore the JCPOA. And in this way, restore the rights stipulated by the nuclear deal. And at the same time, all the countries' decision makers in all bodies and organizations, they should cooperate in order to realize the goal pursued with respect with the JCPOA and the talks. Mr. Raisi made some initial remarks today, and he said that he is not going to use this time for defending himself with respect to some points mentioned in the previous debate. He said that the people from Azerbaijan have called him. I don't think that the people from Azerbaijan have been insulted, and there was no person from there, and we do not have Azeri-speaking people. What we have, Azerbaijan, Western Azerbaijan, Ardabil, Hamedan, Zanjan, and even Khorasan, Isfahan, Shiraz, and even Khuzestan. They are the people who speak the Azeri language. So, since Mr. Raisi is a judge, I would like to ask him to be more precise. I wonder, what is our definition of morality? And and also immorality. If I said something about his academic degree, it was something right. From the classical point of view, he has studied for six grades, and I said that I do respect his studies in the seminary, and then he received a PhD at Martha Motahari School, and I also said that basically the science of economy, like chemistry and other sciences, requires a classical science, and we should also know that moral issues are something that must be manifested in the society. Allow me to explain that, that 2 days ago, IARIB censored 5 minutes of my campaign clip, and this is an immoral action, and you see that the people made comments in cyberspace, and they said that in fact, my question is from Mr. Raisi is that you are a judge, and how come we still have filtering of...
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's choose the next candidate by lot. Candidate number 7, Mr. Hemmati. And let's choose the next question, the question to that Mr. Hemmati is going to answer, question number 6. This is question number 6. A lack of meaningful communication between the education system and the real needs, economic and social needs of the country has led to a rise in the rate of unemployment of the educated people. What are your programs in order to create a balance between the education system and may adapt it to the real needs of the market and the job market? You have 4 minutes.
In the name of God. Also, let me greet the patient Iranian people. In the first place, allow me to make a criticism regarding the manner of the debate session. I also announced it in a different interview. It's just like a weekly, like a TV show or something, a competition. I mean, if we want the Iranian people, the noble people, to exactly learn about our stances, we could have had better questions. I mean, questions that people care, that they want to see what candidates think about those questions and how they would act and get to learn about the modus operandi. This is again a monopoly, and I'm opposed to monopoly in economics, in politics, and in culture and media. The monopoly is the main reason for inefficacy and inefficiency and the source of corruption. You see, now it's not choosing between the lesser of the two evils. It's the choice between individuals that believe that we shouldn't allow this window of opportunity that's being closed regarding interaction of the citizens, and also the choice or option that could shut down all those windows. I mean, I think that our most important burden and responsibility for the people is that we need to make up our minds regarding this. I've already said this, that I'm the voice of the voiceless and the power of the powerless. So why am I making such statements? And it's because my government is supportive of the most vulnerable strata of society, the vulnerable class of society. Before I answer my question, I'm saying this, that I believe that the most successful and the best thing that you can do is that citizens who are more vulnerable, you need to provide them with better life, better living conditions. And those are smuggling stuff through the mountains, and those who smuggle fuel, those with the disabilities, the unemployed, the jobless, immigrants, street children, single parents and also children who have no parents or not the proper parents. These are the predicaments of the society that we live in. We are so much engaged with little things, we just put all of these into oblivion. These are the main points and the main goals of my government. As regards the education that you also asked, this is a really crucial issue. I believe that the competition, the competitive market has a big role in the development of the country, but the government has strong should have three responsibilities. One is health, one education, and the other one reaching out to the vulnerable. And regarding education, fundamentally we need to do some fundamental work about state schools and government-owned schools. We have downplayed them and undermined them. One of the programs that I have for education is to boost governmental schools, and we can prepare certain material, and we could allow the parents to go and choose, select a school. I mean, parents should not. We should give the parents some money, and they could pay their schools, and then they can have. They should have the right of choice, and they shouldn't be forced into registering their kids in a certain school. Now, the next question I'll answer the other part of it.
Thank you. Let's choose the next candidate by lot. Candidate number four, Mr. Azizadeh Hashemi. And the question that he is going to answer is question number five. Question number five. And intersection differences and weaknesses of coordination among government institutions are a result of a conflict of interests, and they have created a dissatisfaction among people in their daily lives. What are your policies to manage these intersection problems between government institutions? You have 4 minutes to answer.
In the name of God, the Merciful, the
Compassionate,
salutations to Imam Reza, peace be upon him, and salutations to the Imam of the time. Well, one of the problems we face in the country's administrative system, and Salam government is after making the necessary revisions. The problem we face is the distribution of duties. We have sectoral ministries, and we have thematic ministries, and we also have the upstream councils, and also we have organs that are part of the administration, and some of them are outside the administration, and they have similar duties to fulfill. In the cultural sector, based on the initial examination, there are 38 organs that are active in the cultural area. The same is true about education, health, and other areas. Now, there are counts in order to evade from being held accountable. The ministers that have to be held accountable before the people and the parliament, there are ratifications approved by this council, and then it's not clear who has to be held accountable for the implementation of these ratifications. So there's a need for a redefinition of the administration. We have prepared a new governance model. It's based on trusting the people, and also it is based on Principle 127 of the Constitution, and the Governor General will be delegated with the new authorities. This is a new model, and I will further elaborate this in Tel Aviv, and also the authorities related to the Cabinet of Ministers. There's going to be 5 command centers for the government, and each of the commanders will be the secretary of the relevant council, for example. The person can be the vice president for cultural affairs, and he is also the secretary of the Supreme Cultural Council. Or we have in the security area, we have the Secretariat of the Supreme National Security Council. So there's going to be three main areas, including the president, the first vice president, interior minister, and the governor generals. So the president, the vice president for planning, and the ministers, and also the area, including the president, the chief of staff of the president's office, and the senior councils. So, speaking of the literacy rate of the clerics and ulama, we have Mr. Raisi here. We have senior scholars in various areas, including economy and humanities. And in many areas, I do learn from ulamas and scholars. And to restrict the domain of science, that's a monopoly itself.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Well, naturally, the last remaining candidate is Mr. Zaccone. But I'll open this. Yes, candidate number two, Mr. Zaccone. And the question is question number two. This is question number two. While unlike the general policies of the population growth rate in the country has been less than what was predicted, what are your programs in order to counter the factors which are threatening the population growth, like infertility and the drop in the marriage rate? You have 4 minutes to answer this question.
Let me say hello and pay respects. Now, the issue of population in the country has reached a critical point. It needs some special measures to be taken. The growth rate is now 0.8%. That's a critical rate. Now, when it comes to fertility rate, also from 6.9% in the 40 years ago, we've reached 1.7%. It needs to reach 2.3% to get out of this horrible situation. Now, for this to happen, there are several layers of plans. In the culture and social domain, we have four lines of activity. One of them, the education and training. The other one, the strengthening and boosting of households and population growth. That's top of the agenda. Health, social welfare, and also protection of the living environment. These are the four axes that we are dealing with, social and cultural issues. Now, 3.5 million infertile, we have infertile couples. Every five couples, one of them is not able to have children. So we have 80 fertility centers. The only thing that's happening that in the long run, and that they should pay colossal amounts of money, they should pay through their nose, and that's not possible for many of them. In the first place, I will first insure them, cover them by insurance, and I will make it possible for them to actually not to have children. Would not be a dream that would never come true. I will try my best to make this possible. The second thing is that in the year 1384, that's 26 years ago, there was a survey, and 60% of the Iranian population announced at that time that they want to have two kids. Now, 2 years ago, we have another such survey conducted. 70% of the people announced that they want, the year 1384, that's 16 years ago, 70% said we want two kids. 2 years ago, 60% said that we accept three kids as favorable. But we are worried about the consequences because the government that, I cannot mention names, Mr. Rouhani, anyway, the the government, because his representative is here in a way, he is not accepting that, to have a debate with me. This is a model. He's just exiting forward. He's not ready to discuss things with me in terms of statistics and qualitative and quantity. He is not going to discuss anything with them. This present government has done something with the children's diaper. We should pay 1 million children for, let's say, in 3 years. How should they afford to pay to buy some diapers for kids? You know, the same, such a disaster people have been living through, that 28% of the people's income are spent outside of Tehran. And in Tehran, for 58% of the income goes to a 75 square meter apartment. I mean, there is no hope left for the people. They cannot afford to do anything. I mean, what I will follow is, in addition to those aspects that have to do with infertile couples, I will also pay special attention to the resolution of the issues of housing issues, unemployment, and inspiring hope, so that the people, 60% of them say that they want to have three kids, 60% of the population. So I'll make this possible for them to remove their worries and concerns. The last point is the situation for marriage. I'll try to facilitate marriage so that people would easily.
Thank you very much. As I said at the beginning of this debate, in this program, we ask each candidate three questions. The first series of questions now came to an end, and the two other series of questions will be asked in the next half. And let me remind that reviewing the actually videos, election campaign videos of candidates by the presidential election is done by the Presidential Election Campaign Monitoring Commission, comprising different government institutions. One of the members of that commission is the IRIB. Now we come to the night's time to for candidates to review, to criticize comments made by other candidates. Let's draw lots in order to choose the first candidate who is going to express his possible criticism. Candidate number one, Mr. Rezaei, you have 4 minutes to express your criticism of comments made by other candidates.
Based on what other candidates said, there was less attention paid to the plan. In order to make up for this, I'm going to announce part of my plan. The issue of justice and also elimination of poverty requires major surgeries and major actions to be accomplished. The plan that I'm going to pursue for elimination of poverty is life sufficiency. It's called Life Sufficiency Plan, or Iran Without Any Poor People. First of all, I'm going to allocate 450,000 2 months of subsidies, and also provide housing units and paying salaries to housewives in cash, and also household jobs, and also defund petrochemical fund. At the time of Mossadegh, the oil was nationalized. It was run by the government, and we want to truly nationalize it. In such a case, there's going to be a package will take shape. It's known as life sufficiency, and I hope after completing this package, there won't be even a single poor person in the country. Some say that we are going to just obtain the needed resources. Last year, $137 billion of government resources have gone into the society, but due to mafia and dirty rent in the country, the major portion of the money has gone into the hands of those who do not deserve it. 40% of the said figure. It's been more than $50 billion. It can be redistributed. We can refund the money. We can give $10 billion to the government in order to eliminate deficit and put an end to inflation, and then spend the money for the five items I said. The 450,000 tons of subsidy, that was $20 at that time. So when we talk of subsidies, some start objecting, asking where are the resources. How about the steel rent and also the mafia kings? We have resources, and they are like vacuum cleaners absorbing these resources. But for the poor, we have no resources. I do not. This is actually my obligation, and my government will forcefully, without any laxity and without fear from any person, will just promote public welfare. The second item is the salary for housewives. You know that in every house there are two persons working, and the husband goes out and works, and there is and the wife has to take care of children, raise the children, and also many matters related to them. Why shouldn't we help? And there are resources. We can benefit from those resources. And the women contribute to the future of the country.
Thank you.
We can have training for women.
Thank you very much. Thank you. The next respected candidate. Candidate number two, Mr. Zakani, you have 4 minutes to express your criticisms.
In the name of God. Well, it was said that there are some people are voices of those people that are smuggling commodities on foot. I mean, you should see $25 billion of smuggling that is conducted every year. 95% of them are through official borders and channels. And we know who is doing this. I mean, when the gentleman was working in the government, why didn't he stop this official trafficking? And by preventing that, he could have created jobs. I mean, the people who are carrying, smuggling, stuff through the mountains and foot, they could have lived a decent life if he had done something. Now, they're saying that we are seeking freedom. Freedom cannot be separated from justice. So as a physician, and as also an old combatant, I said that we put our lives on the line during the war, and we did not mention who is doing what inside the country. We were just sacrificing our lives to the entire people, and we proved that. But the gentleman, they have their own classifications in society, and they do not look at things in such a way that all the public would benefit from certain things. So today, we have the problem of poverty and wealth. We have injustice in the face of discrimination and corruption. We are now facing seeking freedom in the face of tyranny. We have independence seeking vis-a-vis preferring outsiders over ourselves. I mean, people in the incumbent government, they should say, to clarify, which side of the line do they stand? This is really important. I mean, it's clear which side they are taking. You can also take a look inside their inner ranks and see how they played with the people's lives, wealth, and belongings. You know, this is what. They don't need to play victim. They need to show the performance of what they have done. And 8 years ago, there were some people who received, they won the people's votes. And then later on, it turned out that they have had no commitments to whatever they promised in their campaign. So basically, you shouldn't be receive a blow from one same source again and again. So let's try to speak in such a way that would be somehow incompatible and conformity with their performance, with what they have done, with the records of what they have done. Most problems have to do with the bank, functions of central bank, with the foreign currency, the dollar rate, and the policies, the inappropriate policies, and the oversight over the banking operations, the creation of liquidity, Medvedev, you know, blaming others, you know, it's not the right thing to do. So this could be criticized, and we need to speak more about this. And another aspect is what Mr. Rezai mentioned, and I believe that definitely we need to review the resource. I mean, the statistics that they're using and mentioning here, they're really weird. I mean, the subject should not be politicized either. So we need to stick to the national interest. So there is one calculation that I made regarding the statistics and numbers that were mentioned, and then I compared it with the assets of the possibilities of the country. It makes our job very difficult. Mr. Rezai should say exactly by 137 billion what he means by that exactly and how it's going to work on that.
Thank you.
That should be clarified.
Thank you very much. The next respected candidate. Candidate number three, Mr. Mehralizadeh. You have 4 minutes to express your criticism.
Regarding the solution presented by Mr. Raisi for reducing these class differences, social class differences, I believe it's not technical and it's not sufficient, has nothing to do with the status quo. We have tangible problems regarding laborers. We should increase their salaries on every year on an annual basis. And we have to do some bargaining, and it has to be below the inflation rate. And of course, I'm referring to the official inflation rate. And in the past 2 or 3 years, there has been some positive increases, but I believe that one should take into account the laborer, the government, and the employer, and they should be able to defend their rights. And the other point is the issue of teachers. And in fact, they have problems with respect to job categorization and regarding their rankings with respect to their salaries. There's been an unjust treatment towards the teachers, and with respect to their degrees, they have to be addressed like university lecturers. When a teacher studies in university and when the teacher is promoted from the view of his or her specialty, then he should his or her salary must be promoted as well. Regarding those characteristics, carrying fuel, and the coal bars, they have been forgotten. Something must be done about them, and we have 7 million households do not have a fixed salary, and the custodians of families and the guardians. So there are 3 million who have serious problems with respect to their livelihood. There should be a fund for fixed salary, for fixed income rather, and so it should be half the least salary for laborers in order to be able to continue their living. So there's a need for the health insurance fund, and the people do have ordinary insurance, but it's for, and that does not include the surgery, and in case of needing for a surgery, they have to even sell their properties to compensate for the costs. And regarding artists, we have a similar problem. Also, I can refer to nurses during the coronavirus pandemic. They were harmed both psychologically and financially, and